You're listening to District Sentinel Radio, the left's loudest daily newscast. I'm Sam Sachs.
I'm Sam Knight. We got that news sativa for you.
We're in the Sentinel Fort, aka the Harper is a Good Girl Studios, broadcasting out of Washington, D.C. Check out the website, districtsentinel.com.
I said sativa. I actually meant salvia because it's like a 20-minute hit of news.
Okay, noted. Either way, this is that loud newscast. You get a lot of the same yelling and ranting that you'd get when watching the O'Reilly Factor, but none of the sexual harassment. You also, like O'Reilly Factor, don't really have to listen to any ads. Anyway, I mention O'Reilly because he was shit-canned. Fox News confirmed Thursday he won't be returning to his show. Mind you, this isn't because he habitually harassed women. It's because he did it so often that Fox and corporate advertisers couldn't ignore it anymore, so it cut into the network's bottom line. Either way, bye, bitch.
And stay the fuck off of Patreon, you fucking shithead.
Agreed. Agreed. No one wants to hear a Bill O'Reilly podcast.
As I joked on Twitter, Bill was looking desperately to start a YouTube channel sponsored by vibrator companies, but he was devastated when he figured out who the vibrator company's target market actually is.
Which is?
Women.
All right, now that that's settled, let's get on with the rest of the news today. It's Wednesday, April 19th, one day from the weed day. Here's what happened.
The Trump administration has deported a dreamer. That's according to USA Today, which said yesterday that Juan Manuel Montes was deported in February despite having been granted temporary status. The 23-year-old was in Calexico, California, when a Border Patrol agent approached him and started interrogating him. Because he left his wallet in a friend's car, Montes couldn't show an ID or demonstrate his protected status. As USA Today noted, quote, within 3 hours, he was back in Mexico. This happened in spite of Donald Trump's promises to go easy on dreamers, those granted status by Obama in 2014 because they were brought to the United States as children. Montes had lived in the United States since he was 9 years old. Homeland Security officials have denied key details reported by USA Today. According to the Washington Post, quote, officials only confirmed that Montes was deported when he tried to reenter the country on or about February 19th. This is something that Montes himself has admitted. The story has nonetheless led to a rebuke from one Republican lawmaker. Maine Senator Susan Collins said, quote, I'm troubled by it. Iowa Congressman Steve King had a markedly different take on the move. The white nationalist tweeted out a photo of a beer saying, quote, Border Patrol, this one's for you.
Yeah, Sam, before the show, briefly asked me if it's okay to call Steve King a white nationalist. And I said, I'm sure he has no problem with declaring himself a white nationalist. So, yeah, fine by me. And this just goes to show that despite what the Trump administration has said, that they're only interested in deporting hardened criminals, they've also said that just coming here to the U.S.
is a crime.
Is a crime. So yeah. Under their definition, anybody here undocumented is a hardened criminal. Got a rare bit of transparency news from the president. The Trump Inaugural Committee released its donors to the Federal Elections Commission on Tuesday. It didn't volunteer this information. It was required to do so by federal law. Looking at the list of donors, you see a pattern emerge. A lot of people and companies that gave big bucks had their industries later rewarded through Trump's executive orders. For example, there's Kelsey Warren, the guy who owns Energy Transfers, the company building the Dakota Access Pipeline. He cut a $250,000 check, and a month later, Trump greenlighted the pipeline project that had been put on hold by the Obama administration. Then you've got fossil fuel giants like Murray Energy, Chevron, and Citgo, collectively giving over $1 million to the inaugural committee. Trump would later sign executive actions, putting the Clean Power Plan in jeopardy. Notorious health insurers like MetLife and Anthem, banks like JP Morgan Chase, all on the roster of funders, all would later benefit from actions taken by the Trump administration. The top contributor to the inauguration festivities was GOP sugar daddy Sheldon Adelson. He forked over $5 million. According to the Center for Public Integrity, donations of $1 million and up provided access to a, quote, leadership luncheon. that was described as an exclusive event with select cabinet appointees in House Senate leadership.
Now, before anyone thinks this is paying for access, the Supreme Court says that's perfectly okay in the wake of the Bob McDonnell unanimous decision last year.
Yeah, paying Google money it. Is exactly like voting, according to the Supreme Court, and speaking, talking. In total, Trump's inaugural committee took in more than $106 million. That's the most ever, by far. In 2013, Obama's committee only took in about $45 million. He, too, had his share of corporate donors, not so much oil companies and health insurance companies, but AT&T and other telecom companies donated heavily.
I wonder what these mega donors, what their thoughts were on the fact that the inauguration was a fucking disaster and no one showed up and it was ruined by protesters.
Yeah, they raised all this money and it was one of the worst inaugurations, at least since we started looking at the aesthetics of inaugurations.
I'm guessing it may have been the worst inauguration since William Henry Harrison died as a result of getting sick at his inauguration.
Pretty safe to say.
Last night, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson verified Iran's compliance with the multilateral nuclear deal on Tehran's civilian program. But while the development may have been somewhat embarrassing for President Trump, given his criticism of the deal, Tillerson laid out how the administration could pull the plug on the historic agreement between Iran, the U.S., and the other four permanent members of the UN Security Council, and Germany. In a statement, the Secretary of State said that an interagency review of the agreement is underway and that the analysis will, quote, evaluate whether the suspension of sanctions is vital to the national security interests of the United States. This matters greatly because, as supporters of the deal pointed out, reversing the suspension of sanctions, quote, will place the U.S. in violation of its commitments. That's according to Trita Parsi, president of the National Iranian American Council. Indeed, the fact that Tillerson certified Iran's compliance last night means precisely jack shit with respect to Trump's approach to the nuclear deal. Congress passed legislation forcing the administration and forcing the Secretary of State to verify compliance every 90 days.
Staying on Congress, I'm sure Sam Knight has once or twice directed the retire bitch at Utah's Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz. Well, Chaffetz finally listened. He announced he won't seek re-election in 2018. The chairman of the House Oversight Committee told a local radio station that he had just turned 50 and he was sleeping in a cot in his office in Washington, D.C. and not spending enough time with his family and figured it was time for a new direction. Translation, I'm going to cash out right now and do the private sector thing where I can make boatloads of money.
I think, by the way, it's a violation of House ethics rules to sleep in your office, but everyone does it and it's kind of laudable, so whatever. Another interpretation of Chaffetz's decision is that he's a huge baby with a dirty diaper and he can't take criticism. Chaffetz had been targeted by protesters since last year's election, among other reasons for not using his position as House Oversight Chair to meaningfully scrutinize the Trump administration. As Twitter user at Patty Moe pointed out in response to the news, quote, keep yelling at the rest of these dipshits and see if they quit too. Patty, he pointed this out on Facebook, though, so don't try to smash that retweet button.
You can smash the share button, though.
Yes, yes, you can.
In case anyone's wondering, Louise Mensch claims that the Russians have kompromat on Chaffetz, which is why he's not seeking re-election.
I have to say, I really wish I had credentials today and that Chaffetz was on the Hill so I could ask him this.
Yeah.
Probably the only question he'd look forward to answering from the Sentinel boys.
Probably. Chris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas, designer of the cross-check voter disenfranchisement system, designer of the post-9/11 Muslim tracking system, all-around bad dude, has been ordered by a federal court in Kansas to turn over a memo he provided to Trump on immigration policy and voter reforms. It's that same memo that Kobach was spotted holding in a photo op with Trump. There read something along the lines of draft amendments to the National Voter Registration Act. You remember that picture, Sam Knight?
Oh, yeah.
Kobach is being sued by the Kansas ACLU for restricting voting laws in the state, and they believe that this memo is relevant to the case. After all, you can see in the picture it talks about voting. A judge earlier this month ordered Kobach to produce the memo to the court for review to determine if it is relevant. Well, U.S. Magistrate James O'Hara said on Monday after reviewing the memo that it is, quote, unquestionably relevant. Kobach now needs to reveal the memo to interested parties in the court. Kobach has drafted countless shitty policies, but really will be known by us as having really bad OPSEC.
And thank God for that. In other congressional news, last night's special election in suburban Atlanta did not finish with any one candidate gaining an outright majority. That's bad news for Democrat John Ossoff, who won a 40% plurality, but in a very crowded field. Ossoff now faces Republican Karen Handel in a June runoff. Sean Spicer said today that the result was bad for Democrats. "The bottom line is they went all in on it," he remarked. "They came up short." Well, that might be true. Last November, Tom Price won re-election by 23 points. The longtime Republican vacated his seat when chosen to serve as Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services. Price's seat, I might add, was also once held by former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. So if I were Spicer, I wouldn't be gloating too much, especially when considering that Republicans can still lose the damn seat. We shall see in a few months.
Wrapping things up now, let's check out that listener rant line.
Sam Knight 1 singles line.
Hey, Sams. It's Jared from Downingtown, PA. I have a proposal for a peace deal with North Korea. And I this is actually a serious proposal. I think we should send over Dennis Rodman to cool down tensions with North Korea. Because I think Kim and him get along pretty well. And maybe we could maybe try to convince some Korean officials to come over to America and maybe have some kind of like Nixon comes to China moment or something like that to bring down the peace, the war talk. I don't know. What do you guys think? All right. Am I crazy or would that work? All right. Bye.
No, I don't think you're crazy at all.
I don't think you're crazy either. Certainly different circumstances than the whole Nixon goes to China moment, but... When Rodman was in North Korea, like, I know it was, you know, fun to mock and...
He said some stupid things.
He said
Rodman.
A lot of stupid things, but I think he made more of a breakthrough than any U.S. State Department officials have made in North Korea in decades. So.
Yeah. I would rather have a former basketball player / C-D-list celebrity make a bit of an ass of himself than, I don't know, nuclear fucking war.
Agreed.
Did you see the documentary, by the way? Did we watch that together? I can't remember. The extended Rodman in North Korea thing?
I don't think so.
Oh, it's so good. Hmm. It's so good. By the end of it, though, I'm not sure it would work because by the end of the documentary, and I think Dennis Rodman may be sober now, but he was drinking way too much and a lot.
Oh, yeah. And, I remember seeing footage of that.
Yeah. And Kim Jong-un, he was supposed to go... Rodman and Kim Jong-un were supposed to go to a resort together by the end of the trip, and Kim Jong-un just pulled out without saying anything. So that might be the only flaw in your plan. Other than that, great fucking plan, Jared.
I wouldn't put it past Trump, putting Dennis Rodman in some sort of diplomatic post to North Korea. So I think we got time for one more caller. I mean, we make the time, so we've got time for as many callers as we want, but sounds right.
Hello, Sam and Sam. This is Eli Lake calling. A little bird told me that you'd been talking about me on your podcast. And yes, that bird happened to be my mother, the hen who laid me. I don't see what that has to do with anything. The fact that I'm a talking ache man shouldn't matter. My blood bleeds just like the rest of yours. The fact that it's yellow... shouldn't make any difference. You two are what my friend Michael Rapaport would call a couple of crackers. Although I'm not sure he understands how offensive that word can be to someone who's living in constant danger of being cracked open and made into an omelet at any given time. Really, only we should be able to use that word. I'll have to have a talk with him the next time I'm on that podcast. But that's not what I called to talk about. I called to challenge the two of you to a freestyle rap battle. You pick the time and place. I'll bring the sick rhymes. All right. I regret this. Goodbye.
Do you accept his challenge, Sam? Thanks for calling, Eli. I never thought Eli would call into the show.
Eli, I think you're a chump with some snide talk. I'm going to leave your bitch ass frying on the sidewalk. Yeah.
First shot has been fired here, it sounds like. I will say, listening to Eli's minute and a half long message, I was struck by how self-aware he is.
Yeah, yeah. It really doesn't come across in any of his tweets or his reporting or his tweets defending his reporting. Or his reporting on other people's tweets where he talked about going into long diatribes about loving your passion or whatever.
Look forward to hearing back from Eli for the next volley in this rap battle. Speaking of Eli, before we go, as most already know, every Friday we do a separate hour-long podcast called The Sentinel Cast. It features interviews. It also features The Garbage Can, where we throw people in the can for giving bad takes during the week. Eli's been thrown in a few times. Anyway, Sam and I decided we'd democratize the canning process, so subscribers on our Patreon can now nominate people for the can, and then vote on Thursday night on who is going to go in the can. Already, we've got plenty of nominees, people like Andrew Sullivan, Brian Fallon, David Frum, the UK media, the Nashville Predators.
Wait, why?
I don't know. I'm not much of a hockey fan, but I figured you might know.
Maybe some bitter Chicago fans out there. I still have to check on this. I usually spend all my hockey energy agonizing over the Washington Capitals, who play tonight. God.
Anyways, there's still time to nominate other people, and voting opens tomorrow night. To subscribe and listen to the Sentinel Cast and get involved in throwing people in the garbage can every week, go to patreon.com/districtsentinel. Also, tune in to tomorrow's District Sentinel Radio, a bit of a different show. We're not going to be doing a newscast because Sam and I are going to the free weed giveaway, but we are going to record...
Wait. A free weed giveaway for Hill staffers.
Yes, for Hill staffers. So this does relate to news and oversight on what's going on in Capitol Hill.
Drug policy, yeah.
But we are recording an interview with America's weed lawyer, Stefan Borst-Sensulo.
Yeah, yeah.
So that should be fun. That's going to come out tomorrow when the newscast normally does. Probably earlier. I don't know. We'll
indeed,
see.
Indeed. And I've actually been on a tolerance break this week, so it's going to be a little extra loud for me.
Maybe we'll go live. That's the show today. Listeners, call our rant line, leave a message. That number is 202-684-6108. Sponsors of the show include the Congressional Dish podcast, hosted by Jennifer Briney. Check it out at congressionaldish.com. Another sponsor, levelnews.org. Listen to this episode and all other episodes of our nightly newscast by going to districtsentinel.com. If you haven't yet, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud by searching for District Sentinel Radio. Leave a review, give us a rating, tell your friends to listen. We're back tomorrow. We're in D.C., so you don't have to be.